to just start with a little bit of discussion about the Mormon cricket, which is probably a misnomer in that it's not Mormon and it's not really a cricket. It is a tetragoniid, probably more accurately described as a shieldback grasshopper. They became famous and associated with the Mormon church because of the problems they caused the early settlers in the Salt Lake Valley, destroying their crops. The genus name is kind of a disparaging in that it can be translated as unprepossessing, and I think that it's probably a misnomer too, because they can actually be quite colorful, as this large female with the colors show. Why do we need to control Mormon crickets? Why were they controlled? Because of the propensity for this species to develop large numbers and come down out of their more natural habitat in the foothills and in large bands and destroy crops. There's been a lot of research done recently on why they do this, and it's certainly variable on their tendencies to destroy crops, but they are have a wide host range as far as plants that they'll consume. It's probably this century-long control. We could call it maybe a century and a half is when Mormon crickets have been looked at as a problem and controlled. The first American peoples, say the Paiute and Shoshone Indians' attitude toward this insect was more likely they're a great food source. And the California gall that became associated with the Mormon cricket because of its essentially it was sort of a miraculous appearance and consumption of these insects that were consuming the first crops that the Mormon settlers had planted. So essentially then it was not a question of control, but more like it was considered a benefit. So what were the some of the first methods that were used as control for the Mormon crickets? Well, if we look at the historical records, they did a lot of trenching, and they also in some cases recommended the use of sheep. How they would do this is in the early morning when the insects were still rather cold and immobile, they recommended herding sheep across the fields to trample them. It probably wasn't too good on the crops either, but it was better than having the Mormon crickets consume it. Drowning trenches became more popular, especially in those areas with irrigation, so they already had the trenches. In one campaign, it was noted that they had 200 miles of oil on water barriers that were used, and it took 2,400 barrels of crude oil because the people running the control program thought kerosene was not toxic enough for the Mormon crickets. So they would have the water trench and then put a layer of the oil on top, and this would essentially suffocate the crickets when they tried to cross it. Barrier fences were also constructed. In some cases, they were up to 10 miles wide. You will forgive me for utilizing the old English units, but so much of it was done back then, I figured it was appropriate to just keep those units. They were constructed initially of wood, and they'd put a little tin lip on the top to keep the insects from being able to crawl up and over the barriers. They still had problems where in really high populations the Mormon crickets would pile up against the barriers and then just start piling across on top of their fellow insects. And when they started using metal sheets or flashing, which was galvanized, they would use flamethrowers also to burn the crickets back. Well, they had to be careful because the burning would scorch the galvanized metal and make it rough enough the crickets could then scramble over. So it was essentially the Mormon cricket was probably the control efforts were more like what the Mormon settlers called the cricket, which was the war cricket because of these tactics. The early 1900s first saw the use of insecticides, and the famous crittle mixture was tried against the crickets. It consisted of Paris green, which is a double salt of copper arsenate and copper acetate. This is mixed with horse manure, preferably fresh horse manure, because it goes into solution much easier that way. one part of copper or Paris green to 100 parts fresh horse manure. But unfortunately, that much horse manure for large outbreaks was often scarce. In 1926, the Bureau of Entomology started some series of experiments trying to figure out better control methods, and they were looking at sodium and calcium arsenite dusts. And they had to figure out the exact amount that they could use where they would get good control but not burn the foliage off the vegetation. And at that, they determined 5 pounds per acre rate was appropriate. And they got they killed or repelled the marmon cricket because the sodium arsenate was highly irritating to the marmon crickets and still didn't burn the foliage off the vegetation. As you can see here, this is a picture from that period where the workers were lined up and were applying the insecticide. It was pretty hazardous to the applicators, not only from the exposure to this arsenic compound, but also the hydrated lime would cause chemical burns. This was used up until 1942. The baits were becoming popular, but there were problems with it because the arsenical baits are not very good because it has repellent characteristics to the marmon cricket. And the other problem with them was that cattle and other livestock seemed to be attracted to the taste of the baits, probably because of the sodium. And so there were numerous instances of livestock being killed when sodium flow silicate or silicofluoride was first introduced. It was a real breakthrough because this compound was toxic to the marmon crickets and didn't exhibit the same kind of attraction to the livestock. And it was formulated with rolled wheat, which was better than the bran because it was easier to apply uniformly and could be applied by airplane and under more windy conditions than the bran baits. 4-to-100 ratio. And the one thing I was surprised at, I don't know if this was a typo in the one historical record I found, it was applied at up to 50 pounds of bait per acre, which seems pretty high. After that, after World War II and the introduction of chlorinated hydrocarbons, these began to replace the earlier products, and toxaphene, chlordane, and aldrin were probably the first three used. As you can see, the amount of the chemicals came down, going from 8 to 16 ounces per acre for toxaphene and chlordane down to 1.5 to 2 ounces per acre for the aldrin. So there was a real progress there in that if you think about the dose makes the poison, or the hazard is equal to the toxicity times the exposure or rate, then they were making some progress back then. And these were also good as bait toxicants because they didn't repel the marmon crickets. In a trial that was performed in 1947, they found that the best bait was 4 ounces of aldrin in 2 quarts of diesel fuel and then mixed with 100 pounds of rolled wheat. And this was applied at 3 pounds per acre application rate. The one record that I discovered, it was the largest contiguous area, was a 300,000 acre block in Nevada in 1953 by a DC-3 airplane like this. After the treatment, a group of the people observing and working in the field searched for several days and didn't find a single live cricket. No mention was made of any non-target effects either. Sprays instead of bait. After a while, with the introduction of these new products, they found that they could probably just spray ahead of the bands and get good control and replace the baits for logistical and economical reasons. 2 ounces of aldrin and 1 gallon of kerosene per acre was widely used. By 1962, these chemicals were recognized as being hazardous and posing an environmental threat to persistence and bioaccumulation. Carbaryl came next in 1962, a carbamate. It is still commonly used at this time, up to a half pound of active ingredient per acre. It has low mammalian toxicity. Difluobenzuron is our newest product for marmon crickets, registered in 2002, and it is usable in barrier and rats treatments, low rates, and has much less problems with non-targets. Essentially, you can use it down to as little as 0.016 pounds of active ingredient per acre and only treat half the acreage per, infested. So if we can see the progress in control through time, perhaps in another 100 years, someone will give a similar talk, and maybe they'll go, well, why were they controlling them? Those are good eating. I'd like to give credit to the some people supplying me with photos, and can take questions now if you'd like. Yes. It's highly variable. The two questions were, how often do they outbreak, and how are they being controlled now in Nevada? The outbreaks occur infrequently, but they can last for a long time. So it might be 20 years between outbreak cycles, but then it happens and can persist for several years. Like I said, the difluobenzuron or Dimolin 2L is the product of choice now, and they can spray ahead of the bands in the vegetation, and the marching bands of crickets will get in there and consume it, and then the next time they molt. It's mainly an IGR, so it's against immatures, and that's when the crickets are most mobile during that stage.